free my mind. Open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life. On the growing edge, on the growing edge.
And now, here's Allie.
Hello and welcome to Growing Edge Live. I'm Dr. Allie Benjamin and it is my great joy to be here. Welcome back, or welcome for the first time if you are here for the first time. Here at Growing Edge Live, we are all about inspiring minds, healing hearts, transforming lives, and evolving consciousness. And we do this by having conversations with incredible people, soul-centered individuals that are channeling their time, their energy, their creativity, love, resources into doing great work in the world and bringing us together as one. And today I'm going to be having another great conversation with a beloved friend of mine. You're going to get to meet her in a while. This is Dr. Janine Burns. But we're going to start with our Ask Allie segment. So I have a question that Brandy sent in. And Brandy says, I just moved. I'm starting a new job. I have no friends or family in my new town. And I'm really struggling to find my way forward. I have never experienced this amount of fear and anxiety. Please share some insights around fear, loss, and new beginnings. Wow, this is so timely, as I too have moved recently. And so I can really relate to some of these things that you're talking about. You know, as I consider our journey through life, we all have a tendency to struggle when we're facing change of some sort, when we're going through a particular transition, or when we lose someone, or when we start a new job. There's so many ways you can dive into fear around loss, loss of control, new beginnings, and moving can be one of the most stressful things, especially if you're moving away from family and from friends. Starting a new job, you know, all of that together can be very anxiety provoking. And so I do have some ideas that I'd love to share with you, Brandy, to support you in starting this new chapter that you're beginning with a sense of groundedness. And so I think really, when we're about to embark on a new chapter of our lives, there can be so much chaos with the actual physical move and all of that. But once we've got settled in and there's only a few more boxes to unpack, we start to realize the enormity of what's just happened. We're in a new location. We're surrounded by a whole new, if you've moved to the same state, it's probably pretty familiar. But some people move to whole new countries. I know that I did. I moved from England to here. And it can be very confusing and challenging and exciting all at the same time. But I know that we can develop a particular practice, our own practice, wherever we are. And to start with, it's about being mindful. It's being mindful and giving yourself some grace that, yes, you've been through some changes. You're away from family. You're experiencing a lot of loss. And so the first thing is to be gentle with yourself, to realize that maybe intellectually it makes sense why you moved. Maybe physically it was the right thing to do. Maybe you're in a better situation now. But emotionally, our heartstrings can be tied to that, the losses and such. And so it's time to extend ourselves grace. It's time to feel our feelings. And through a meditative practice daily, through journaling, through contemplating, through maybe reading some new material on the area, you can start to develop a way of connecting and a comfortable place each day that you create in your own home or outdoors, if maybe you do better meditating while you're walking, and you start to explore what this move has meant to you. You explore the losses, the friends that you're leaving behind that, yes, you can talk to them on the phone, but you're not going to be as close, and the family members. And so there's a great deal of insight that can occur when you give all of this some time to percolate, to explore, to become curious. How can you stay connected? How can you let those people that you've left behind know that you're thinking and caring about them? And all of this sort of helps with the transition. It makes the move richer. As you know, as many of us know that have lost loved ones or have had to make moves and lost our sense of self because we're no longer that person that lives in that house, in that town, we have to move forward with that sense of loss. And sometimes it takes months, years, the rest of our lives to sort of carry a little soft spot for that memory, for all of those memories of how it used to be. But also what I know, when one door closes, another one opens. And so as you're stepping into this new world, this new experience, you're on the very edge of becoming, having a whole new life and potentially becoming a whole new you, is to do some visioning, asking yourself, what would I love to experience in this next chapter of my life? Who do I want to be? And we start to realize that we always have the opportunity to recreate ourselves. And a big move like this is the perfect time to stretch a little bit. And I think of the word, the acronym STRETCH, as start thinking radical evolutionary thoughts that create harmony. And so you can start thinking new thoughts. Start thinking about the way you want to connect in this world, in this new town. So you start to realize that it's going to take you to step out of your comfort zone, to step into new ways of thinking. What if it's easier than you thought? What if there's a neighbor or someone in your new workplace that is the perfect person to connect with you? Maybe you're an answer to someone's prayer. So there's a lot of new opportunities that are facing you, Brandy, as you step into this new chapter. But remember, wherever you go, you can create your own sacred place within your home to do this deep inner work of connecting, of mourning the losses, and starting to vision the new. And you also, you get to bring the next iteration of you out loud and on board in your life and share that with those that you've left behind. But remember, wherever you are, your source is within, that there's only one life. This life is God's life. This life is perfect. And this life is your life now. And it's true for all of us, wherever we are. When we take time to stop and turn within and find that rich resource of God's love, we find faith in knowing that we're always sourced and supplied by this rich, renewable resource within us that is God's love wherever we go. And so when we can remember that and trust that, it comes along with us from birth until we leave. And so trust that, that you're connected, that you have this friend within you that is going to be your companion. And it is that spirit of love that God is. So I hope that this has supported you, Brandy, as you're moving through these changes and this time of sacred rewriting your story. So namaste and peace and blessings to you. Okay, so now we are jumping in to my conversation with this amazing woman, Janine Burns, Reverend Dr. Janine Burns, that is. I met Janine about 15 years ago. There she is. And we are both of us, we're part of the Affiliated New Thought Network. And I know many of our viewers are a part of the Affiliated New Thought Network. And many of them probably know you because you are a staple. You are a foundational member of ANTN and Emerson Theological Institute. The two of them go hand in hand. Anyway, so we met. We're part of the same organization, and we met about 15 years ago. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about Janine. Dr. Janine Burns holds doctorates of religious studies and divinity from Emerson Theological Institute, and she is an ordained minister. As the director of the Guiding Light Foundation, youarethelight.org, Janine serves as a celebrant performing celebration of life, funeral, and memorial services. Dr. Janine also does a lot of nourishing people with her spiritual food. She does it on social media. She does it if you meet her in person. She's got these really beautiful cards, and I have some over there on my altar, where she talks about food for the soul. And so, Dr. Janine, welcome to Growing Edge Live.
Oh, so nice to be here, Ali. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And so usually to begin with, I like to, for my audience to get to know my guest. And I'd love it if you would share with us how you got to be Reverend Dr. Janine. This didn't all happen, you know, over the last couple of years. When did you first realize that you were interested in spirituality? Was your family religious? Did you grow up that way? How's your evolutionary journey been?
Well, I recall being a very little girl, probably about 4 or 5 years old, and I wanted to be a minister. I was so into the church. But unfortunately, I was born in the early 50s, and women were not allowed in the church. So I was really disheartened because I spent many years supporting the church. And the way I became a minister is kind of cool because I was working in the optical field, selling eyewear in New Jersey. And it was a great job. And one day I went into a bookstore and I saw a book fall off the shelf, which I thought was quite weird. And I went to pick up the book and it said, Power of Your Subconscious Mind. I didn't know I had power in my subconscious mind. I was like, okay, so I bought the book. And the next day I went for a voice lesson, took a deep breath and doubled over in pain. I was really, I found out in retrospect, I had pelvic inflammatory disease. And so where I was staying in a home, she sent me to a doctor. I found the doctor. I went to the doctor. I was in so much pain. And he said, look, I can't really do anything for you, but I'm going to give you some antibiotics. You come back in a week and I promise you, we'll get a therapy together and we're going to get you better. So don't worry. Okay, I went home, couldn't eat, going to the bathroom was torture. It was just the most painful thing ever. And so all I could do was read the book to distract myself. And it said there was an infinite intelligence within me. That book, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, is by Joseph Murphy. And he talked how this power could heal your body. And so he gave some suggestions for affirmations. And I worked with one. And of course, it's memorized because I literally must have said it a couple of thousand times a day. That I'm open and receptive to the healing power of the infinite intelligence within me. Every cell, every muscle, every tissue and bone is renewed, renourished, and revitalized. I am healed. I am healthy. I am vital and strong in my mind, my body, and my spirit.
Wow.
A week later, I said it over and over. I went back to see the doctor and he said, I don't get it. He said, if I had not examined you myself and taking these notes, I wouldn't even have believed it. You're better. What'd you do? I tried to explain to him what I did. And of course, God worked through the medicine. And he said, I don't know what you're doing, but just keep doing it. So that was really exciting for me. And then I came back to Long Island where my home was. And my girlfriend and I were very into going to church. She called me up. She goes, there's a brand new church. It's in another town. Go check it out. And it was called Religious Science Church. It was a Church of Religious Science. That's what the Centers of Spiritual Living, the whole combined to become that. And I decided to go in the back entrance and it was their library and I opened the door. And the first thing I saw was the book, The Power of Your Subconscious Mind. And I knew by then that was divine synchronicity, and I was in the right place.
So I started
taking classes, and that's where everything began for me.
So the church of your childhood was not New Thought, or
no? The church of my childhood, I asked too many questions, and you know, you just believe my child and pay attention and all that. And I just had a deep longing. And New Thought is amazing because New Thought is really, it's a way of life. It's a way of living. It's a belief that you actually combine it with any religion you want, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's true. But it was a wonderful way to think of God as omnipresent, and that the power was available to you at any time, that you could stop, drop, pray, and boom. It's just, New Thought's amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, growing up in a more traditional religion, knowing that the priest or the spiritual leader was sort of the way you got to God, and then hearing about the power of the subconscious mind, that there's something within you, you know, that's a big paradigm shift.
It made so much more sense, though, to understand. And then when you become really aware that your thinking is very powerful, and the more it's cumulative, the more you study, the more you pray, the more you work with the affirmations, what happens is your belief gets so incredibly strong that you begin to think things and they happen. You know, you think of someone, they call you on the phone, like basic, you know, New Thought principles. Or I have an ongoing conversation with God. I'm like, okay, God, what do I need to know now? What's my next step? Especially in my work. It's critically important in my work, is I'm talking to God all the time. What's the next thought? What am I supposed to say here? Because I don't know. But the universe always comes through.
Yeah, it sounds like you're really in tune, that you obviously mentioned the 50s. And so we can only, you know, we can calculate your age. For many, many years now, you've been walking in this world of affirmations, of knowing that you're creating one thought at a time, that you are tuned in to your intuition, that you're, I call it conscious living. We're just aware of, you know, we're listening to that still small voice within us all the time. Can you share any examples of how you
give an example? Yeah, when I didn't listen, I can give you an example. yesterday, I had a house guest from out of town, and I kept on hearing, take tissues. And I'm like, I have a tissue in the car. I don't need tissues. Take tissue too. Well, this person ended up having this nosebleed, and there were no tissues. And I was like, okay, you know, and I think when you get divine guidance, even if you get a message that you would call quote unquote bad, as long as it comes with a sense of peace, then you know it's divine guidance, because fear thoughts will come in, you know, the ego's always working there, and, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But if you're willing to listen and it comes with a sense of peace, you know, for sure you're being guided.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's, I'm thinking back to Brandy's question about the fear of, you know, moving into a new place where she doesn't know anyone.
She's grieving too. That's an unacknowledged loss. Grief is moving, because you're excited about the move. You got the new job. You don't think about letting go in the past. And as you started, you said difficult change is difficult.
Absolutely. So where are you living? What part of the country? You're in the States?
Yes, I am on the North Shore of Long Island, New York. Beautiful, okay. North Shore, Long Island. A little cold, might be a little cold, might be in the 20s today.
Yeah, but I'm here in Utah, and it is chilly and snow-covered mountains.
Oh, it is, okay.
Yeah. So you've lived your whole life there?
I have. I was brought up here, and my dad was a big boater, so I was brought up boating a lot. Big fan of boating.
Yeah. So is that pastime, a hobby, boating?
Some could say it's a job, because, you know, when you volunteer so much, you could think it's a job. Yeah. I'm a vessel safety examiner. So what I do is, on behalf of the United States Power Squadron, on behalf of the United States Coast Guard, you go on vessels and check them to see if their safety equipment is operational. And it's wonderful. usually don't need to teach safety. Sometimes I do. There were a lot of new boaters during the Great Shutdown, so sometimes I do. But it's so wonderful to see these amazing vessels and to climb down into an engine room to look for the document numbers and all. It's really terrific. And I'm also the rear commodore of the local boating council, and our job is to be the liaison between boating community and enforcement, law enforcement.
Wow, that's amazing. So how long have you been doing this kind of boating stuff? I've heard you talk about it, but I don't know how long you've been doing it.
I guess my dad used to let me take out boats by myself more than 50 years ago, pretty big boats too. Back then things were so different, you know? But yeah, my dad wouldn't let me ride a bicycle though, Reverend Allie. Or Doc, I'm sorry, I've always called you Reverend Allie. Oh yeah, no, I was not allowed to ride a bicycle because they were too dangerous, but I could take a boat out by myself.
Oh my goodness. What a life. Mm-hmm. What a rich life. Yeah. So New Thought sort of started on the East Coast from what I hear. So what are some of who are some of the teachers and people that are from your part of the world that we might know about, or you could tell us a little bit about the history of?
The New Thought did start on the East Coast, but almost immediately went out west, and it burgeoned out there. However, on the East Coast, we had Irwin Seal. Irwin Seal, he wrote a wonderful book, Irwin Seal, about the Lord's Prayer. He was really big in New Jersey. We had a minister named Dr. Tom Johnson who started here, but again, he went out to California. Raymond Charles Barker, he wrote a terrific book. I'm sure you're familiar with The Power of Decision. And he started in New York City, was very famous, did a very powerful work. Eric Butterworth, now he was New Thought. He did powerful work in New York City, Eric Butterworth. There was Dr. Stuart Grayson. And then there weren't that many. When I started, I was ordained 35 years ago, and there was nothing here. There was only one center here is what I meant. In Long Island, there was one in the city. There was one in Connecticut, and there was one in Massachusetts, and one in New Jersey. And that was it back in the 70s. But things have grown so much now. Because of it being a way of life. And there's been a lot of people who've kind of taken the teachings of New Thought and brought it up under psychology and put their own spin on it. Even with something I'm involved now, havening techniques, it just astonishes me how that all that information is basically proves what we teach and believe in New Thought. You know, that your thinking is creative and that you can change your thinking. Science is beginning to approve what we teach in New Thought.
Absolutely. So what is it that you do? Do you have do you go to one of the centers in the area? Do you speak? Do you teach?
I fill in for, I used to speak a lot out in East Hampton, but they closed that center just recently. Unfortunately, a lot of churches and centers throughout the states have closed from the Great Shutdown. But what do I do now? My goal is to help people who are grieving. I do celebration of life, funeral and memorial services. And I don't talk particularly about religion. I do talk about how the soul lives forever. I talk about how time does not heal all wounds. And whoever said that never loved deeply, because with time, nothing really changes. You never get over loss. It's like a cut. It heals from the inside out. And every time you bump it or something comes up, it gets raw again. And so I've been working with people who are grieving. And I love to perform the celebration of life, funerals, and memorials, because when people are at their worst times in their lives, that they're just so hurt, that you can offer them hope and solace. It's such a wonderful thing to be able to do that.
Beautiful. Well, why don't we jump off and take a small break, and we will be back in about 3 minutes with Dr. Janine. See you on the other side.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth.
to live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.
On the growing edge.
And now, here's Ali.
We're back. Good. So you were talking about doing memorials and funerals and loss. And I'd love to dive into that a little bit. You know, I was on the break, I was thinking, do I really want to go down this path? But I think I do. So you've made several comments on the, you know, the big reset, or I'm imagining we're talking about COVID and everything that happened, the lockdown and all of that. And I know that affected me deeply. I know it affected a lot of my family and friends. It really was a huge opportunity for us all to kind of face ourselves and our fears and uncertainties. And many of us did lose a lot, you know, lifestyles. I know our two churches that I was leading, we closed the doors. And so I know for many of us, there's been this, you know, everything's come back, is coming back online, so to speak, but for many of us, it's not as it was. And there, it takes time. And so I'd love to talk a little bit about how you have experienced loss, talking about loss, how, you know, doing memorials and funerals, you're right there with people that have just lost someone that's very close to them. So this is a big part of your work and your life, is being with people that have experienced loss. And so let's dive in and have a deeper conversation about that. What have you found? Have you experienced a significant loss that sort of made you more able to be that one that holds space for others?
I've experienced so many losses, which probably made me available to that. I used to teach for Reverend Ike and Carrotta in New York City, and so many of my students passed away. And I remember saying, God, could we just go 3 months without someone passing away? It was just amazing to me. So loss is tough. And I think what's happened, people call me Rev, I'm so depressed. And I talk to them. Depression is a clinical diagnosis where you really can't get your act together. You can't get up, you can't get dressed, you can't get moving. Similar to grieving, but I believe a lot of people are grieving. In fact, I'm giving a talk at the 2024 International Havening Techniques Conference in June, and I'll be talking about that. People are grieving. They're grieving a loss of life, and we lost a lot of connection. I mean, we can certainly connect on this platform we're on now, and StreamYard and Zoom and Skype and wherever else, but we've lost our interpersonal connection. And our spirit is our highest priority is our connection with spirit and then with others. So we were able to continue on with our own spiritual worth and connecting with God, but not with others. And in the line of values, that's our highest value. So it's very difficult. A lot of people are still struggling with that. And so what happened for me, which really sprang me forward in a different direction, was I was asked by the, it's called Pine Lawn, a cemetery here, big cemetery, to give a keynote talk at their opening event for people who couldn't bury their loved ones due to COVID. And I gave this talk and was just astonished how many families were coming up. One family came up 4 times. They lost 4 people. They couldn't properly bury them and say goodbye. And I was like, God, I got to do something about this. Tell me what I do. So the lady where I gave the keynote speech, she put me on their mailing list, and they started a once a month program for people who are grieving. I figured, why not tune in? And I did. And I learned something called havening techniques. Havening techniques. There was a lady, her name was Irene, it's hard to pronounce, Hajisava, H-A-J-I-S-A-V-A. And she's like the OG of grieving, right next to the people who created it. And So I learned havening. I was on this workshop, and this lady took us through this simple exercise where she told us she knew a neurosensory technique. Neuro having to do with the brain and sensory having to do with touch. She explained that havening was the word haven meant a place of safety and comfort. And she taught us the primary ways to self-haven. And so one of them is stroking on your face. I typically wear eyeglasses, so I like to stroke my forehead, then my cheeks. That's one primary way. Downward on your shoulders. This is creates what happens, and it's a complex process to even talk about how it happens, how the brain works, is ridiculous because you can't get everything. This is the third way, rubbing your palms. But what it does, it activates Pacinian corpuscles. There's a whole chain reaction, goes right to the amygdala where the flight and fight response is stored, and it produces low frequency delta waves. There's like this whole chemical cascade in your brain, calcium neuron, calcium modulin. And then the amygdala, the low frequent delta waves are emitted. Even if you just sit there and do this for 30 seconds, you'd be astonished how your body down regulates, you know. And so what happens then is serotonin is produced. Serotonin is known as the happy hormone and dopamine. There are seven techniques to havening, but just to know how to haven, just to know where. This way, this is the most effective way in Chinese medicine. There's a meridian here. It goes right to the amygdala. You want to calm yourself down and get centered. This is the quickest way. The head of havening, the founder, has an affirmation. I am safe, peaceful, and calm. I usually say I'm peaceful, safe, and calm. It makes more sense to me. Peaceful, safe, and calm. And it's been just tremendous. And what happened recently, I did a service for a woman. She had an egregious loss. It was just egregious. The worst thing you can even think of. And so I stopped her on the middle of our, because I interview them before. I don't just walk in and do a service and leave. I connect with the people. I want to really honor and support them as they move through the loss. And I said to her, look, let's just stop right now. I want you to trust me here. And I want you to put me on speakerphone. I want you to gently stroke your forehead. And as I'm talking to her, and I was speaking to her calmly about, you know, how she was feeling and she's havening. And like a minute later, I was saying, in this moment, I am safe. In this moment, I am peaceful. In this moment, we finish. How do you feel? She goes, I feel amazing. What'd you just do? I said, well, it was your body, because God really, really, really gave us everything that we could need to live a peaceful, a productive, a rewarding, a prosperous, joyful life experience. Everything. It starts in our thinking. And havening is an amazing neurosensory technique. There's one of the techniques with healing, Reverend Allie, that is so crazy. If you have PTSD, I, as a certified practitioner, have been trained to help you remember the incident, but not the emotional psychological pain. So this lady's son died in a most egregious manner. And I helped her. She found her boy, and it was so traumatic. And I helped her be able to remember that without having this horrible, horrible, awful reaction where she'd cry, she'd sob, she'd get, I mean, just awful reaction. And It was beautiful. And then I went to do the funeral and I looked at her and I went like this, just to the whole front row. And this was a funeral home. Some of them just have like four or five. This front, there must have been at least 15 seats in that front. Everybody started hating. She told everybody. And so I told the congregation, I said, if you see me rubbing my hands, I'm not clapping, I'm havening. And gosh, ever since I learned that, Ollie, because I tell you, Allie, when I was a pastor, I was a pastor for quite a while, people would be in so much pain, mostly from non-forgiveness, mostly because their ego was in charge. And that SOB and I'm what, and you play over in your mind, I should have done this, I could have done that, why didn't I do that, and what's wrong? Then you start beating yourself up and you beat up the other person. On. First, you need to be willing to forgive. But even with that, it's not easy. And that's what really catapulted me forward with both having, even becoming a minister when I learned about forgiveness. And it worked. It just definitely worked. But havening can really wipe out the emotional component. That's why I love havening. I just love it, love it, love it.
Wow. That's so interesting to hear you talking about that and being able to support that woman, that mother, through that really challenging time. You know, I don't know how familiar you are with the stages of grief. You know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and I'm just wondering, you know, those can be, you know, some beautiful teaching or offering to bring to people that are nearing their own death or struggling with the loss of someone they deeply care about, for sure. I'm wondering, with this example or this story that you just told us with this mother, and then considering the five stages of grief, I'm wondering what you think about shock, like in this whole, when there's been, you know, a very traumatic, you know, death in the family, and, you know, you're supporting people through many of these kinds of things. How does shock show up? Because it's not talked about specifically in the five stages of grief.
Well, but first of all, the five stages of grief were designed for people. If you read into it, you're designed for people who had just learned that they only had a year to live, or 2 years, you know, or 18, 16, 6 months to live. That's why they wrote that book. But people have taken those stages of grief and translated them to what you go through. And the issue with that is that there aren't really stages of grief. You go back and forth and up and down and over and under with grief. Grief would just kick your butt. I can remember one time being in the grocery store, and I'm bopping along. My mother had died about a year prior. I'm like, doo-doo. I go past the eggs, and I suddenly break down. Why? Because my birthday was in a couple of days, and every year my mother made me crepes for my birthday. Breakfast in bed, crepes. And even as an adult, she'd come over to my home and make me crepes. And what are crepes made with? Eggs. So I went down the egg aisle, and I lost it. But what really helped me is I know that grief is like a wave. If you allow it and allow yourself to feel horrible, like you're walking through hell, and or feel like you're going to die yourself, and you just allow it, it passes. Even if you don't allow it, it will pass. But if you allow it, you heal from it much more quickly. The way out is through. The way out is through. And we resist. So many people are grieving, and we just resist it so much. We push it away. And we know that what resists persists. It's what do they used to call that? What does Jerry call that? Dr. Jerry Troyer, spiritual bypass.
Yeah.
We have spiritual bypass. Everything's in divine order. Everything's fine. Not taking care of the emotional component. That's why when I learned havening 2.5 years ago, it changed everything. I had such an amazing tool to help people heal from traumatic loss, help people. It's also used for revitalizing and recharging yourself. There's seven different applications. So, but just like I said, to learn the simple techniques to soothe yourself are just amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, because I've experienced a big loss with my son too, and as you were sharing about this mother, I was connecting, and I was thinking that the havening, you know, what you showed her, could be a really great tool, not could be, is a really great tool for someone that's in that level of shock, you know, such a...
It was hard. Her son had died by suicide. And so when she found him, it was a horrible, horrible shock. So this technique has been wonderful. And she's been all over YouTube, looking at all the havening technique videos and doing them all. There's 2 minutes to an hour, and she's really she's actually thinking of being a practitioner herself.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, I can definitely relate, because when you're in that space of loss, and, you know, speaking from experience, you know, I reached out to people that I loved and knew were ministers and therapists, And even though I had those incredible resources in those friendships, there was still something that was like, that wasn't it for me. I was so frozen, so stuck.
Yes.
You know, with these images, with these right. thoughts, with these right. emotions, that even, you know, the talking therapy, the, you know, connecting with friends, while all of that was helpful, there was still something. And I wish I had known Havening at the time, because there's that, I would imagine, would make all the difference.
It truly, and even at this point, it could even make a difference in terms of the memory. So there's different types of Havening, and there's one called outcome Havening. You could change in your mind the outcome. What happens is, and you can't really separate the parts because it's one big dynamic. But when I studied the science, what happens is there needs to be a certain parameters for an encoding, for a trauma to be encoded in the brain. One of them is inescapable. You can't, when someone passes away, you can't make them alive again. You just can't. So you can't, you know, so you, there's the trauma. And what happens is there's these little AMPA receptors. They're like antenna on your amygdala. And your amygdala goes right away really fast. If it starts to perceive a threat, with less time than in the blink of the eye, it checks with the hypothalamus, the thalamus, before it decides if there's a threat or not. And you'll notice if someone gets too close to you in the car, or you know, someone goes through a stop sign and about to hit you, you get an adrenaline rush. Your amygdala is right there to protect you. So when there's a trauma, these little AMPA receptors, they're called AMP, they do is they get potentiated, and you get an adrenaline rush. And what happens is they get encoded in your brain. They literally get glued in your brain, because your amygdala's job is to protect you. And then after that, it wants to know if you're happy and safe. But its first job is to protect you and keep you alive. And so when you haven, you distract someone's working memory. So while they're haven, you have them talking about something. And how it's actually done, it's just like it's one big dynamic, and it's hard to explain how it works. But after this calcium cascade, this glutamate is created, and it's like the glue that takes away, that's keeping these antenna up, and they come down and they're depotentiated and they never come back again. It's amazing. So you will remember the event, but not the hurt and the pain. And I'll do people in the afterwards to be like looking around, like, you got to give them a second, because they can't believe how different things are, how things have changed. The brain is absolutely amazing. Just serotonin, oxytocin, GABAaminic, butyric acid, all these are created just simply by rubbing your palms. Remember when I first started doing funerals, and there's not a lot of, I was going to say chicks, there's not a lot of women out there doing funerals. And I would get there, you know, I'd show up, and I'd find myself havening, because a lot of people intuitively haven. You'll see people go like this, they'll rub their head, or they'll go, And so I would stand at the podium, and under the podium, I'd rub my palms together, and I'd say, stop it. You're a woman in a man's field. You don't look professional. Stay still. Stay still. And then I took the havening, and I realized I was intuitively soothing myself in preparation of doing a job, because doing funeral and memorial service is mostly about energy. You have to be able to manage a lot of very sad, grieving people all at once and allow it to move through you. It's also important to know that you're working for the universe, because that's the only reason you can do it, is that God's got you back. And in New Thought, we teach that direct inheritance from God is divine love and divine wisdom. Love is the glue that holds the universe together. Love is the energy that connects us one to another, and it's eternal. And wisdom are divine ideas, divine intelligence. And so the universe always gives you ideas, always. And the more you use these, you work with this energy of love and this energy of wisdom, the more it just becomes so obvious. And so you begin to ask, God, what do I do here? Quick. I do that all the time when I'm doing a funeral. God, what do I say? What do I say? You know, because someone will come up to me and just say something so out of the blue. that if you weren't sent it, it could just really affect you. And be thinking, God, what do I say? And then you come out with the perfect answer that is so unloving and just what they needed to hear. It's the most beautiful thing in the world. We would always be divinely guided if we were willing to take the time daily to connect. You'll just be guided. Mm-hmm. You know, even I bought a new boat because, you know, my age, if I don't get what I want now, when am I going to get it? So I said, okay, it's a priority to me. And even buying the boat, it was so divinely ordained. We're supposed to go up to, I live in Long Island, supposed to go to Massachusetts. The guy was trying to talk me into buying the boat. I never even saw the boat and he wanted me to buy it. And I'm like, no, that's not working. So let me look on Facebook. I look on Facebook and there was a boat that was maybe 20 minutes away from me, the exact boat that I wanted, the exact model and everything that I wanted. And that was divine guidance. That was being willing to be open rather than, oh, I'm never going to find a boat and they're all so expensive and, you know, all the good ones are gone and, you know, they're going to be in Massachusetts anyway. And that kind of thinking is natural because it comes up from the ego mind and the ego mind protects you. But then we have to be in charge. Are we going to allow those thoughts to stay in our mind? Are we going to keep thinking that we're going to say, you know what I did? And I still recommend this to people. When I first got into practical spirituality in the mid 70s, New Thought, I made a list of things to think about instead. Because when you're thinking negative and you only go, oh man, that's so negative, it's hard to think about something to think about instead. I had my little list of things to think about instead. I remember skipping down the docks with my dad as a little girl, holding hands and skipping. I remember my grandfather grew roses and had a wall of roses and across his whole yard. And I put all these things to think about instead. So that when I realized that's not what I want to be thinking, that thought is leading me down a path I won't be there, I would have my list. Now I don't need a list. Now I know what, now it's automatic. I know how to shift my thinking.
Yeah, beautiful. So how can people get in touch with you or learn about havening? What would you suggest they do?
Well, what I'm doing now, beginning in April, the first Monday in April, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I am going to teach people havening and for free. No buy-ins, buybacks, because I'm not really interested in seeing clients at this point. You know, if I want to work, I'd rather do funerals and memorials, but I want to teach people havening. So I'm going to do it once a month. You can go to havening.org and find out. My website is transformationalhavening.org. And YouTube has a gazillion videos. Kate Truitt, T-R-U-I-T-T, tremendous teacher. Doug O'Brien, there's so many names. It was created by Stephen Ronald Rudin, R-U-D-I-N. So there's many ways that you can check out. Plus, every Monday on Facebook, every Monday morning, I do Monday Mindful Moments and I do havening. Like today I talked about listening skills, but at the end I did havening on being a good listener. So
that's incredible. That's wonderful. Oh. So I always like to end the show with this question. We've all heard the song, What the World, you know, the lyrics, What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love. And whilst that's very true, what do you see in your particular corner of the world, corner of the playground? What do the people in your area need now?
I think, I don't know if it's my corner of the world in particular or if it's just in general. What I think the world needs right now, people who care. People who care. I think what happened with the great shutdown, feelings, interest, and concerns for another was diminished because they had to just be so concerned about themselves, you know, and, you know, where they were going, what they were doing, and what was going on in their life. People need to be kind and to care. When you know that someone cares, when you're grieving, the only cure when you're grieving, if there's really no cure, but knowing that someone cares makes it bearable. That's what makes it bearable, is knowing that someone cares. And right now, if people cared more, reach out and be nice. Do something good. You know, we have so much love and light within us. We can silently bless people. Whenever I go out, I look for the good and talk about it. Look for the good and talk about it. Show that you care about others. Be kind. Be compassionate. And our world is changing in big ways. We're going to have a lot of big cultural changes. We're already seeing them now because there have been so many people flooding into the country. We're going to be seeing cultural changes. So we need to be flexible and we need to care about others. And what comes with caring is respect. Respect for another human being and respect for yourself.
Beautiful. All right. So let's finish with, would you lead us through a little havening with some maybe affirmations to do with this acceptance?
Let's haven. So what we're doing right now, just notice how you feel. You could give it, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, so just kind of check in and notice. Like 10 was like, you feel fantastic. And just notice how you feel. And let's begin to haven. Start by rubbing your palms together. That's a wonderful way because you can always do that on the sly. Nobody knows that you're havening. And then you can stroke downward on your shoulders. And across your face. And let's spiritual affirmational havening. So what we're doing is creating new neural pathways. And my favorite affirmation is, I am divinely guided in all I think, say, and do. I am divinely guided.
Divinely guided in all I think, say, and do.
Beautiful affirmation. I'm always in the right place at the right time.
I'm always in the right place at the right time.
For I am divinely guided.
I am divinely guided.
I move forward with ease and joy.
I move forward with ease and joy.
Trusting the process of life.
Trusting the process of life.
God is my source.
God is my source.
There is one source, but many channels.
There's one source, but many channels.
It is God who is the source of my good.
It's God who's the source of my good.
It's not my employer. It's not the government. Employer. It's God.
God is the source of my supply.
God is the source of my supply. One source, many channels. God alone is the source of my good. Ernest Holmes affirmation. Page 337, Living the Science of Mind. Good and more good is mine, and ever-increasing good is mine. There is no limit to the good which is mine. Everywhere I go, I see this good, I feel this good, and I experience it. It crowds itself against me, flows through me, expresses itself in me, and multiplies itself around me now.
And so it is.
So it is.
That was beautiful, Janine. Thank you so much for being on Growing Edge Live today. Yeah. It's a real treat to get such a hands-on practitioner. And that's something that I know all of your clients and all of your loved ones and family members are blessed by your ability to bring the peace into their lives. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And thank you everyone for watching today. If you'd like to get hold of Reverend Dr. Janine, I always get those two things transposed. You can find her at It's Guiding Light, right?
Oh, yeah. It's transformationhaven.org. And my email MS is Dr. Janine Burns at gmail.
Awesome. All right, everyone. See you next week. And next week, we've got another great guest. You'll have to tune in and see who it is. And thanks again to Michael, New Thought Media Network, and our beloved Janine. Mwah. Bye.
Free my mind, open my heart with the whispers of truth. To live a conscious life, to live a conscious life on the growing edge.